You're listening to the Eyes on Isles podcast with Matt O'Leary and Mitch Anderson.
Hello and welcome to the Eyes on Isles podcast, episode number 173. What's going on? I am Matt O'Leary with Mitch Anderson. Mitch, how you doing, buddy?
I realized how old I am today, which isn't crazy old, but like still, I'm 36.
Okay.
And I went sledding with my kids because it's snowing here. Apparently when it snows on Long Island, it just means like snow is falling, but it doesn't stick. You guys fooled me. You tricked me there.
Yeah, big time. We had our first quote unquote snow of the season. It flurried for like maybe 15 minutes where I was.
I thought we were all going through the same thing and it was fun, but until I found out it wasn't. Anyways, so I'm sledding with my kids and one is sitting on one leg and one is sitting on the other, and I'm going to push us off. And that's as soon as I do that. So picture me on a flying saucer, two kids on me, the 4 and 5, like not crazy. You know, there was, I think one weighs 40, the other one's like 35 pounds, that is.
Yeah.
Nothing much. And I'm going to push off by like putting my arms aside and pushing off the snow. And immediately, that's when I felt both of my triceps just not snap, but like you said earlier, cramp and just absolute just pain and tightness. And I'm rolling on the ground like, ah, oh God. And my kids have no idea what's going on. They're just like, he might be dying, but you know what? We need to hit these slopes, baby. And so they're just going, and like they don't care at all. I'm rolling around trying to stretch it out. Ah, it's ridiculous.
Amazing. Love that. Love that they were just like, well, you know, no soldier left behind was thrown out the window, and they're just like, F it, we're going to go back up and slide down this slope a little bit more.
All dads left behind.
Amazing.
They're basically like cats, right? Like,
yeah.
He fed me, so like I don't care what happens to him.
Yeah, unbelievable. That's amazing.
What's going on with you?
Not a whole lot. Like I said, first little snow of the year. We got a couple of flurries. I know that's huge, but gonna be back up in the upper 40s tomorrow and Friday. So it's gonna be warm again.
Wow. What? Whatever. You know. Climate change is real. I get it, but we finally got some snow back. Like it snowed a while ago, and it went all the way. It was all mm-hmm. melted with rain and hot weather. Mm-hmm. Now it's back, baby, and it's here to stay, I hope.
Perfect. So let's hop into this episode, Mitch, because we got a lot to get to. Obviously, we have some news with the potential January 13th. We'll get into that later on. But what we want to start with is Anthony Beauvillier. And, I'm going to utilize your skill set, Mitch, because I'm going to be completely honest. We need your translation skills, because Anthony Beauvillier hopped on a podcast or show or something, and it was all in French. And I tried to watch it. You sent me the link, and I tried to do the closed captioning thing, but once reading gets involved, I lose interest very quickly, so...
And it was a long interview. I didn't realize how long it was. Like half hour, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe not that long, but like 20 to 30 minutes. And yeah, it's all in French, and it's not like really rough French. I've heard there's some really bad French out there in terms of like just broken and very joie-y, and it's hard to follow even for like the translations or the what is it again? The captions.
The captions, yeah, closed captions.
The captions can't follow it because it doesn't make sense in actual French. Anyways, Bo speaks proper French, and so do the two men on On Jaws, which is We Talk. And so they asked him a bunch of questions, right? About a whole bunch of things. The whole Anna Kendrick situation, they asked him about it. They asked him about what was the main thing for me was what was the success for him this year, right? Like what happened this year for him to become this, not just top six player, but consistent top six player.
Right.
Because for years, Bo was not that, right?
No. Inconsistency was the name of the game for Anthony Beauvillier, unfortunately, early on in his career. And the tough thing was he was real, like expectations were really high at the end of 2017-18, and then 18-19 came, and then it was like a complete 180. And then going into last year is like, all right, what the hell? Like, what is this guy? Which version is he? And I think we kind of got an idea that it's going to be probably somewhere in the middle, which is fine. But now we just kind of know.
Yeah, like it might not be 60-point Bo every year, all year, but it probably won't be 28-point Bo either.
No.
It's probably going to be like maybe 40 to 50.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair and reasonable.
Right, which is fine. And maybe in some year he might, you know, if everything goes well, maybe it's a 60-point season. Maybe more, but I think that's going to be his baseline. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the transformation happened this year, and it was very clear, it was very evident. And so they asked him, what changed? Qu'est-ce qui s'est passé? And he laid it out to, as far as three factors. He said, being a fourth-year pro really helped. Okay. That makes a whole lot of sense. You're in the league. You figure out how things work, where things need to be. You're not really too scared of your place. Like, obviously, you could get replaced, but, like, you've been here for 4 years, so, like, your first-year jitters are gone right. about being replaced. And plus, he signed a deal, right, for 2 years, a one-way deal. So, like, getting sent to the AHL doesn't necessarily make sense for him. His next one was being under Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello for the second year.
Okay. That's enticing. So that's something that interests me when you told me that.
Because we forget how the coaching carousel specifically changed for Bo, right? Like, he came in under Capuano. He was gone within, what, like 6 months, not even?
Yeah, by January, 3 months probably.
Right? Yeah. So he was gone within 3 months. You bring in Doug, who was just doing what Jack did with a different voice for the first 6 months and then completely changed things and basically burnt the house down yes. almost literally in his actual first year behind the bench. And then he gets Barry Trotz after that. Yes, Barry Trotz is a great coach, but that's coach number three, figuratively or technically coach number four in 3 years. That's tough for a kid trying to figure out how to play the damn sport at the professional level.
Right. No, absolutely. And with all due respect to the other two, Capuano and Waite, it's they're not in the same conversation of caliber a coach of Barry Trotz. And I'm sure what Barry Trotz demands out of his players is very different than what Capuano and Waite. Well, I mean, Capuano was more defensive mindset than Waite, especially. But
that's an understatement.
Yeah, but still, even the jump from a Capuano system to a Trotz system, and what's expected of you is completely different. I feel like.
Yeah, and so the thing that Bo said about Barry is that at the start of the year he gave me more responsibility, which. Is something that I learned when I was working back at my old day job is that to entice people to give you more, you don't always take things away, right? You don't take the punitive road all the time. Like, I'm going to take your ice time away, or I'm going to take this away if you don't do this for me. Sometimes it's, I see the potential. I'm going to give you more and trust that you will perform at a higher caliber. And that's what happened this year. Bo got more penalty kill time. And to him, that was a huge confidence boost is what he said. And so going into the year, he had this huge confidence boost right away from day one saying, I'm going to play a lot of power penalty kill time. He had 42 seconds of power penalty kill time last year or 2 years ago in 18-19. 42 seconds.
Right.
That's it.
That's nothing. Virtually nothing.
And he had 42 minutes, 46 seconds this year.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
So, like, he had that confidence going into the year, and then he had a good start, he says, which, if you look at the stats, he certainly did, productive-wise. And so that just clicked, and it never let up. He had the confidence, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, my God, manifested itself on the ice, and he just rode that throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, it was obvious that's exactly what happened, because usually he was someone who tended to start slow and then picked it up in the second half of the season, where this year he was able to get going right away, which I feel like that plays a role in the confidence factor. If you start performing well early, then it's like, okay, like I got this. And that's kind of what happened. And then obviously there was that pause, but even in the playoffs, he came back. And after that long break, which was essentially an off season, he was good again. So that's a great sign.
So, like, he had 4 points in his opening three games of the season. And then he went through a little bit of a lull. And then by game 17, he put up, 8 points in four games. Just went off. Went off, right?
No, talk about a little bit of a hot streak right there.
So, and that's what we expect from Bo, right? And that's emblematic of everything we've talked about him so far, is that he's very streaky. He's very inconsistent, which happens, right? Like, he's not a top-tier player. He just isn't. No. But he's clearly a top six, maybe not top six. He's a second-line player, maybe a first line if you don't have a good enough, you know, a better first-line player than Bo. But that all manifested itself this year. And then the third factor he brought up was Derek Brassard, actually. Which, I shouldn't be surprised. Like, it's not like Derek Brassard is such a bum that there's no way he can help anyone. It just kind of... It's a surprise that he singled out that one player, right? Like, a guy that we realize is good and has a place, but maybe that place can be better served given to someone else, right?
Yeah, and the ironic thing is he failed, and I'm using that in air quotes, the word failed, at what he was originally brought in to do. He was supposed to be the third line center, and we learned pretty quickly that he was much better suited on the wing. And early on in the season, he found some success, and he was playing with Beauvillier, if I'm not mistaken, early on in the year, right?
That's
with Nelson, too. So maybe just having that guy, the professional who's been through it a lot, and Brassard speaks French also, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, so maybe that played a factor, because you would think, like, okay, he's played with Brock. Like, Brock's a veteran who's been there and gone through his struggles and came out the other side, so maybe they would be, you know, relate. But maybe he just relates more to the guy who speaks a language that he's most comfortable with.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Bo gets by in English, gets by very well. Everyone can understand him. He's got the accent, which I appreciate fully. But, yeah, he's definitely a French kid. So is Brassard. So is Pajot, right? And mm-hmm. Barzal, to an extent, right? Barzal knows how to speak French.
Yeah, that's true.
So that certainly helps. But you're right. He gravitated towards a guy who's been in the league for 13 years. And he called him like a big brother to him in the locker room. And apparently, Derek Brassard is absolutely beloved in the locker room. Like, loved. And Bo said, and I'm going to quote him here, he said, "I really hope he comes back. I really want him to come back."
Okay. Interesting. I don't think I would be stunned if the Islanders brought him back. It would have to be for very, very cheap, though. And it's not like you're going to get in a bidding war over Derek Brassard. You could probably get him close to the veterans minimum, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to cost a lot. It would surprise me if he gets a raise. Maybe pre-COVID that would be possible. Like, well, we got you in the bargain bin. Here's a couple more dollars, you know, 1.5 instead of 1.2 type of thing.
Yeah.
But now there's no way with the amount of money not going around in the league, there's no way they're going to toss more than $1 million at Derek Brassard.
Right. Here's 800,000, you know, thanks for coming back kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. There's no reason to give him more than that. It's just, you don't have the monies, right? You just don't. You might as well just bring in Oliver Wallstrom, who's definitely going to have a higher ceiling than Derek Brassard, even if it's going to cost you, what, $64,000 more on the cap?
Yeah, something like that. It's either 864, 867, something like that. But
yeah, it's $70,000 well spent.
No, I 100% agree with you on that. I am curious to see if he does, he being Lou Lamoriello, decide to bring Brassard back into the mix, and if that holds weight. Like, I feel like that has been rumored, but I would put that behind, like, in the pecking order, it seems like Green and Martin are right there in terms of coming. Like, that's pretty much just an assumption at this point, where Brassard's a little bit underneath that, but I don't think I'd be super surprised if they brought back Brassard.
No, it wouldn't be surprising. To me, it would be just kind of like a little deflating, because that definitely means that Oliver Wallstrom's not going to get a spot, or a Kiefer Bellows, or even an Otto Koivula, who we'll talk about in a second. Like, to me, that means like we've set our roster. We have the guy that we want on the right side, or Joshua Sang even, right? Like, yeah. I know he signed for more AHL money, but he'd still like to play at the NHL.
Oh, sure.
And you get Brassard and it's like, you have no chance, my friend.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, if the third line is Komarov, Pajot, Brassard, that would be rather deflating in my eyes.
Yeah, like it screams veteran Barry Trotz. I get it, but like, and maybe it works. It's not to say that that line wouldn't work. It just wouldn't inspire me to think like they're going to be so much better this year. It would just be like, they'll be good, but like, I wish they would try harder with something else.
No, would it intrigue you if they... a little slightly off topic, but would it intrigue you if they brought Brassard back and had one of the kids on the other wing? So it would be Pajot, Brassard, because he's a lefty. He could play on either the left or the right wing.
That's true.
And either one of Bellows or Wallstrom on the other side, depending on whoever.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that for sure. Like, Broussard can give you more than Komarov can 5-on-5. He probably can't give you more when it comes to the penalty kill. But you know, you chalk up those minutes elsewhere, right?
Like they have a million.
I'm not
guys
really sure how
play.
Many minutes Komarov got last year on the penalty kill. Let me bring that up.
Well, you do that. They have a million guys who can play on the penalty kill. That's the most overrated thing with Leo Komarov, that he's a PK specialist. The Islanders, Cizikas, Clutterbuck, Nelson, Bailey, Beauvillier. How many forwards can you have to play on the PK, Mitch? It's insane.
He had 66 minutes of penalty kill time last year.
Okay.
Which is down from 142 the year prior.
Okay. He didn't play as much.
No, 46 games compared to 81. So, you know, chalk that up to, let's say, half. Mm-hmm. But still, that's more than 50%.
No, it is.
Right? So, like, I they could toss those numbers around elsewhere, right? And maybe give a few more minutes to Bo, give them to someone else. Maybe Broussard, although, like, he's barely played on the penalty kill in his entire career.
True.
I think he played the most this year ever. Not even. The most he's ever played in a single year was 19 minutes and 21 seconds in 14-15.
Huh.
When he was with the Rangers. Outside
right.
of that, like, he's usually averaging, like, under 10 minutes.
Yeah, okay. So he's not going to play on the PK, but I'm not really super concerned about that because the Islanders have multiple people who could fill that role. While we're on the subject of the third line, do you want to move on and talk about Otto Koivula and make our case there?
Yes, sir.
All right, so this is something we've brought up in podcast form and I recently brought up on the website. When looking at the third line, most of the assumption is that J.G. Pageau is going to be the center. That's a given. But the wings yes. are very much up for grabs. And most people are saying it's up for grabs between Oliver Wahlstrom, Kiefer Bellows, Leo Komarov, and Michael Dalcol. Those are usually the four. But I would like to enter in a fifth name in Otto Koivula. And I know we're going to get into the on the farm section next, but you have written about and watched a lot of Otto Koivula recently, and you and I agree, but why do you think he could fit so well on that line?
Well, what's the one thing that the New York Islanders like from all of their players?
A well-rounded game, two-way game?
A solid defensive player. And Barry Trotz has said last year that I have full trust or full faith in Otto Koivula in the defensive zone.
Yeah,
does he have that for any of those other players? Maybe Michael Dalcol. I wouldn't say he has that faith in Oliver Wahlstrom. I wouldn't say he's got that faith in Kiefer Bellows either.
No, I don't think so. I definitely don't think so. And that's almost surprising because if you look at his ice time, his being Otto Koivula, he played less than 10 minutes in like 8 of his 12 games, I'm going to say.
That makes sense. I'm going to bring it up now because I don't have it readily available. So he averaged, 7 minutes, 55 seconds of ice time this year in 12 games played, right? So let's just bring up these game logs. So clearly he's not going to have a whole lot more than that. The most he got was 13 minutes. My God, the ads bouncing this page around everywhere. He had 13 minutes, 39 seconds in a game against Detroit on January 14th. That's the most he ever got.
Okay. So this isn't someone who's gotten a lot of ice time, so it's not like he has a huge sample size to show Barry Trotz, but the fact that Barry trusts him in such a limited sample size, I think is interesting.
Yeah, he's got a 70% defensive zone starts. Yeah. Like the Islanders don't mind using him in the D zone. They really don't. So that to me is key number one, right? Like already point to Koivula, like maybe 2 points to Koivula right now.
Right. Something else that I like, and I'm sure we could talk about, is his size. He's big. 6'4", 215, 220, something like that.
I'm going to round up, I believe. So, yeah, 6'4", 220 is what he's listed on Hockey Reference. That is a big kid.
Yeah, he's big. And I think that would work in the style in which the third line is likely to play.
Yeah, like he's a big kid. He uses his body, relatively. He's got 12 hits in 12 games. Like he's giving you a hit per game, which is what you want from a guy with a big body. And keep in mind, he's averaging just under 8 minutes of ice time, which is nothing, right? Like Matt Martin usually gets 9 to 11 minutes.
Right.
So like he's not getting a lot of ice time. He's only ever played 12 games at the NHL, of course. So like getting your bearings is obviously something to do. So, yeah, he's got a big body. He can use it. And that's a huge advantage to him. Again, like, it's not to say that Otto Koivula, or sorry, Oliver Wahlstrom isn't a big kid. Like, I believe he's 6'1", 180, maybe 190, I'm going to round up. Mm-hmm. And Kiefer Bellows isn't a small kid either, but he's clearly bigger, right? Like, 6'4 is huge for a skater.
No, it is. It is. He's a big boy. And I'm intrigued with what he could potentially do. And not a fourth line role, because I feel like that, and that's what he was essentially playing in his most recent stint. And I feel like he has enough offensive upside. And I'm not saying he's going to be someone you put in your top six, but someone who could play on the third line. And you'd be like, okay, if he could play with JG Pageau and maybe Derek Brassard too, maybe he gives you like 16 goals in a season or something like that.
Well, we've seen him perform at the AHL level, right? So he has 68 points in 105 games at the AHL level. He had 22 and 36 this year, but he bounced up and down, right, between the NHL and AHL.
Yeah.
And he had 46 and 69 last year, or 2 years ago, I should say, 18-19, in his first professional season. And that's when he was moved from the wing to center. So, again, point to Koivula, he can play different positions, right? He can play on the wing, and he can play down the middle. So, huge right there and then. And then out in Finland, he has, let me bring it up here, 11 points in 14 games. He's sixth on the HIFK team in terms of points. But you have to remember, he didn't start the season with everybody else. No. He was a late addition to the roster. So he's like 5 to 3 games back of everybody else. You give him another 5, and he's probably third, maybe fourth on the team in terms of scoring at like 15, 17 points. That just on the fact that he's 11 and 14 is incredible. He was again a late addition to the roster. He didn't score in his first two games, and then they just kept coming, and he went like on an 8-game point streak, I think it was. I'm just spewing out a number here just because I don't have it in front of me. 1, 2, 3, it wasn't that long. There's one little, he's got one little game where he's got nothing there. Okay. But it's like he's got like 10 points in like 8 games or something ridiculous.
Yeah, that's impressive. And obviously that's not the NHL level, but it is, I mean, it's good competition that he's playing against, and he's already been rather effective in the AHL already. He's someone who I think if he were to go back to the AHL this year, which isn't out of the realm of possibility, I feel like he'd be someone who kind of like has outgrown it and is kind of just waiting around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's at a Sebastian Aho crossroads, right? Like,
yeah.
He's too good for, maybe not too good, but he's good enough to go to the next level or to get a tryout at the next level. But there are too many players ahead of him that he's not getting the fair shot.
Right.
And so he's sitting there in limbo going like, when am I going to get my chance? And this year might be his chance.
Yeah, it very well could be. And I am definitely intrigued with him getting a look. Yes, maybe Kiefer Bellows and Oliver Wahlstrom have a higher offensive ceiling than Otto Koivula. I would not argue that, but with Koivula, I think his well-rounded game and the fact that he's versatile, can play center or on the wing, gives him a slight edge.
Exactly. He checks a lot of boxes for the Islanders. His ceiling may not be as high as like the two guys you said, but they know they can put him in the roster now. He can serve a role, and he should theoretically be better than some of the guys they've already got, like Michael Del Cole. Right, like this should be they should get more out of Otto Koivula than they should out of Michael Del Cole.
I would definitely say so. That's another thing is how much longer do you want to continue to run back the Michael Del Cole experiment? And I think in the playoffs we saw the fact that he only played 3 games. Now,
yeah,
like maybe he's starting to fall out of favor with Barry Trotz.
I had him fall out of favor in my top 25, under 25. Like, he was low, considering he's playing at the NHL level, right? He had, 53 games at the NHL level this year, scoring 10 points, where a lot of the players around him were not at the NHL level. In my mind, his stock has fallen considerably. Well, just look at his minutes, right? He's averaging 13-21 year one, 12 in year two. This is the NHL level. Mm-hmm. And then 11-48 this year. And then in the playoffs, he had 3 games averaging 9 minutes and 59 seconds. Like, it's just going down every time he gets out there.
Yeah, it feels that way. And, we make the jokes about the flat line, but he's not going to move the needle forward at all. He's just, if you want a guy who can just exist out there, then he's your man. But it's not like, at least, we just kind of threw him under the bus not too long ago with talking about Leo Komarov and how he's just pretty much a PK guy. At least he can do that, where Dal Colt doesn't play on the power play, doesn't play on the PK. He kind of just exists at 5-on-5, which not really that valuable.
No, that's just it, right? Like, if you're just there to soak up minutes, well, can you not get another person to soak up minutes and give you something? Yeah, you could. Like, there's a reason he's a replacement level player, because arguably you could just get anyone to do that, what he does. And hopefully it turns around for Dal Colt this year. I just don't see it. And I can see an Otto Koivula coming in and taking that role, because he can give whatever Michael Dal Colt is giving you and more. Like, probably considerably more.
Yeah, I would say so.
And so that's a huge benefit for the Islanders. Will they give him the role? I don't know. Like, if I had to pick, like, how it would roll out, or my depth chart for that third line left wing or whatever wing position, it goes Wallstrom, Koivula, Bellows in that order.
Okay, I think that's probably fair.
And, like, Wallstrom and Koivula are a lot closer than you think.
Yeah, it's almost, I would say it's like maybe what, like 55-45, something like that.
Yeah, it'd be like one Wallstrom, 1.5 Koivula, 3 Bellows.
Yeah.
Even I think that's fair. I skipped two, but I think you get the joke there.
Exactly. There you go. Perfect.
It wasn't funny if I have to explain it.
Do you want to get down to the farm, see what's going on around the prospects?
Yes, sir. Let's do that. So where do you want to begin exactly with down on the farm? There's so many like barnyard friends here that I don't know where to begin.
Yeah, I would like to talk about the NCAA. I feel like we've neglected them a little bit.
We have. That's for sure. Because like they only recently started, and a lot of my attention was focused on what's going on overseas, that I forgot that their season started already. But they're all, well, as far as I know, most of them are playing. Not all of them, sorry. What is it? Logan Cockerell still is yet to play. So he's out at Boston University. Their season was already delayed. And then there was a COVID test just recently on December 3rd. And that further delayed any beginning to their season. So they're just kind of like sitting around waiting for it to start. He was recently named captain of the team. So he's looking to have a good year for BU. He was a 7th round pick in 2017 by the Islanders. Right. So like, now is the time to do something. Okay. But outside of that, I want to talk about Alex Jeffries.
Okay.
Specifically.
Yeah, let's do it.
So he's a 4th round pick from this year and just went to the collegiate level this year out at Merrimack College. And he is on fire right now.
Okay.
He's got 3 points in 2 games to start his career. He opened his account. Well, I say account, but like he opened his goal account, we'll say, with this like really nice, there's really nice goal against University of UMass, Massachusetts, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't really know all the teams very well, but like he skates down the wing. So one of the things that we heard about him in his draft was that he's a speedy winger. Mm-hmm. And he showed it on this goal against UMass, where he just picks up the puck in his own zone, goes flying, gets the defenseman to bite, but he's so quick the defenseman just kind of like stabs at it and it like pulls himself out of the play. Cuts in front of the net, boom, it's in. Beauty goal. Like, getting in front of the net was, like, what was the best part of that. Obviously, the goal is great, but, like, the fact that he was able to generate that speed, open up a lane, and then put it in, incredible. From a 4th-round pick.
Yeah, no, that's a really good sign. And he's a youngin', right, if he's just getting to college now? He's an 18-year-old?
Yeah, I believe he just turned 18 recently. No, sorry, that's Rejan Yemi, so... I forget when Alex Jeffries' birthday is. I have to look this up now because I want to know it for my own sake. Merrimack, where are you, buddy? Let's pull up his profile here. They don't list it. Way to go, Merrimack. Unbelievable. Oh, there he is. Born November 8th, 2001. So he just turned 19 in November.
Okay. Still not bad for someone who's young. He's going to be there for a little bit, but that's intriguing to see. I like speed. Speed excites me.
Yeah, and like you said, this is year one, this is game two, right? Like, he's got a ways to go, but so far so good, and you're going, all right, if this continues, holy Hannah, we might have something on our hands here from a 4th-round pick. And that gets you excited from some of the other guys that we've been hearing about, right? Like third round pick Alexander Junkrantz, and you're going, all right, he's dominating at the U20 level in the SHL, and now he's playing at the SHL level. Sweet. You have fifth round pick William Dafoe, who was dominant, just scoring goals left, right, and center at the QMJHL level. Awesome. Then you have sixth round pick Matthias Rajaniemi, who's now playing for Team Finland. Well, sorry. He was invited to the 35-man camp for Team Finland's World Junior Championship roster. Whether he makes the 24-man squad or not is still debatable. Right. I don't think he makes it, but he's a big defender, and he's playing a decent amount of minutes at the Liga level, which is against men, right? And this guy just turned 18 on September 11th.
Right. So, that's a good sign. If you're that young and playing with, you know, people who are that much older than you and playing well or well enough, that's a really good sign.
Yeah. And then we got our big, huge goalie in the seventh round who's doing relatively well at the Messis level, which is the league below Liga. So, like, you're looking at these picks, and yeah, we didn't have a first and second round pick, but looks like we did our homework for picks 3 through 7 or rounds 3 through 7, and we got some decent value so far.
So far, right. Obviously, a lot of time, and it's still very, very early, but. Another thing that I wanted to ask you about was Finland. So they're shutting it down for a little bit. So what's that going to impact for the Islanders?
Well, so the Mestis League is out until December 19th, arguably December 26th, because there's no games between the 19th and 26th.
Right.
And so that impacts Otto Koivula. It impacts Rajaniemi, although he's, again, with Team Finland, so that kind of gives him, you know, a team to be practicing with. Although all these teams are still... they're still training, all of them. So it's not like, oh, we closed down, we can't play any games, go home and sit and play Xbox for a couple of weeks. They're still training with the regular squads, with coaches and so on and so forth. So I said Koivula, and then I said Rajaniemi with Pelicans. And we also have a second-round pick in 2018, Ruslan Ishkakov, who is playing with TPS, who is also sidelined for now because of this COVID break up until December 26th. And so that's the main three. And then we have two other guys playing at the Mestis level who are done for the calendar year. They're not back till January. And that's Jakub Skarek, who was playing with Pelitat at the Mestis League. And then we had Henrik Tikkanen, who was that seventh round pick, giant goalie.
The big guy.
Who's playing with IPK. And they're out, done until January 1st. Although, who knows with some of those guys, mm-hmm. right? Because like, they could call back Koivula real soon, and they can call back, Skarek real soon as well.
Right. So, okay. Go ahead.
As far as I know, camps are supposed to open December 28th, like NHL camps. If there's a 10-day quarantine period, I would expect Otto Koivula to be here in North America at the latest, the 18th of December. But I've already seen some players like Nico Hischier posted on his Instagram that he's heading over from wherever he was. I imagine it was Switzerland, heading back to North America. So I would imagine that Otto Koivula is probably doing the same soon.
Right, especially if they're not playing too.
Exactly. But they are training, right? So like, yeah, good point. HIFK is still having training sessions and stuff. But at what point you're like, I still need to kind of rest a bit to get ready for camp. So like, We'll see what happens here, especially if he's got a chance to make the NHL. He's going to want to like maybe get settled before he has to like jump right into getting into camp.
No, absolutely. So anything else on down on the farm before we move this thing along?
There's not a whole lot else going on. Like Oliver Wallstrom is back and scoring, and that's about it. Like there's a ton of players here that just aren't really playing, or there's no news. Like Anatoly Golishev, nothing's really going on there. Robin Salo just eating up minutes. I have some questions in with Anatoly Golishev, so we'll just wait to see what he says about that, because I keep hearing that like he's not going to come. Well, he said in April that he's coming. What changed between April and now?
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens with that.
So news potentially coming with Anatoly Golishev or not. We'll see, but like I've got questions in with him that I have yet to hear back, but like I just sent them today, so we'll see what he says in a couple days from now.
Absolutely. Awesome. Want to get into the quiz?
Let's do it. It is episode 173 of the Eyes on Isles podcast, Matt. Are you ready for this week's quiz?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's see if you can get it better than last week. I don't know. You might have a hard time, so I made them a little bit easier.
Okay.
Are you ready? Just in case, for those at home who aren't aware, every week we play a game where I get Matt to guess a specific player who's played for the New York Islanders, who's played X or done X. This week, it's 73. That's the key. Okay?
Okay.
You have five guesses. Each one is progressively easier. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Clue number one. I was born not far from Timmins, Ontario. The reason I say not far is because he's got a... The town name is very specific, and I feel that might give it away. So Timmins, Ontario, he's very close to there, is where he was born.
Okay, I don't have a guess yet.
Perfect. Two, I played 890 games in the NHL for five different teams over his entire career. Including the Islanders, obviously.
Including the Islanders, okay. All right, next.
Three, my son currently plays in the NHL and was almost traded to the Islanders.
JP Parise.
Nice, I didn't know if you'd get it right away. Yes. Good job.
All right.
Four was, I was traded to the Isles in 1974 because my team, the Minnesota North Stars, thought I was washed up. I'd score 171 points in 240 games with the Islanders and 16 points in 17 playoff games in 1975. Five, I'm JP and my son is Zach. That would have given it away easily.
Yes, but that was good. You had me fooled on the first two, and then that third one, you gave me enough in order to get it, but that was a fun one.
Didn't know if I should have used that one, four or three. I wish I had flipped them, but either way, it doesn't matter. It's only for fun.
Absolutely. So there you go. Okay, love that.
Good on you getting it for number three. Good job, buddy.
Thank you. Let's get into the social segment. We'll see what's going around on Isles Twitter. Mitch, what do you got for us this week?
My first one comes from, I'm going to screw up this last name. I'm sorry. Will Shiarushi, I hope. At Will Shiarushi. Should Pat LaFontaine have his number 16 retired by the Islanders?
Wow.
Right?
That is such... He is like the... we get into the Hall of Very Good debates. He is right there on the fence. Like, you can make points for and against. How many years did he play for the Islanders?
He played 8 years for the Islanders. The most of any team in the NHL. He only played for three, but the most.
He is so borderline. It's close.
566 points in 530 games, 287 goals. I'm with you. I'm just... I don't know if I should take points away because he wanted to go, but like the reason he wanted to go is because ownership was terrible.
Yeah, it's...
That's not necessarily his fault.
No, it's not. I'm so on the fence with this. I guess I would lean no.
I would also. I can't be like, I'm not going to put Josh Bailey in my Islanders Hall of Fame if I'm not, or raise Josh Bailey's number to the rafters if I'm not going to put Pat LaFontaine, right? Like, Pat LaFontaine is such a better player than Josh Bailey, as much as I love him. I wouldn't put Josh Bailey up there, or I wouldn't put Pat LaFontaine, so I wouldn't put Josh Bailey. Let's just say that.
Yeah, that's fair.
I turned that one around, but you know where I was going.
What was yours? My first one is a little tidbit from Forbes. Did you see where the Islanders come in terms of value?
I did.
Yes, 16.
16, that's up, right, from 18 last year.
Yeah, it's going up, and they lost money. They lost a lot of money this year.
So, the most in the league.
Right, so that's a good sign, trending in the right direction. And then, obviously, when they move into Belmont next year, you'd assume that's going to help a lot, too.
Yeah, so there's only the Islanders and, I believe, five other teams whose valuation did not change from last year. The other five teams, the Rangers, the Leafs, the Canadiens, the Blackhawks, and the Bruins.
Okay, so
which are also the top five most valued, literally all billion-dollar franchises.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all like super, super well valued. So, okay. Interesting.
So that's important. And yeah, like they lost a lot of money, but they did a lot of upgrading everywhere. They're spending to the cap. And we know that the seats aren't being filled. We know that. Like, I think Forbes said the amount of revenue per fan was like $9, whereas the Rangers are getting like $32.
Okay. Yeah, they also sell a lot of sweets, though, with the Rangers.
Well, exactly, right? So you double that when, like, let's say you double that when Belmont opens or UBS. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. That'll help. They're going to be making money in a while. I'm not worried about that one bit.
Yeah, no, I totally think so, too. I agree.
My next one comes from Kim M. I think everyone knows at Isles Girl 3.
Yes.
On Twitter. She says, some people have asked if I've always been this nuts for the Isles. Here's a shot 4 years ago of me in high school locker room. And she's got the Islanders jersey, the Islanders hat on, Islanders leggings. She doesn't have the lipstick, but like I'm sure that was on the next stage of her evolution. Which got me to think, what's like the most decked out Islanders in maybe the weirdest situation, like a high school locker room bathroom isn't where you would expect someone to be decked out in Islanders gear. Where was it for you? Where have you been the most decked out in Islanders gear in the weirdest place?
Okay, I got a good one. So I guess it was not this past season, the year before that. I went to a game at the Barclays Center with my friend. And so we were on the train. So we were drinking on the train. We went to the game. We had a few drinks there. And then we went out to dinner. We took a subway to Manhattan. We had dinner in the city with our group of friends. And then it was our friend from college's birthday. So we took the train back to Long Island, went to Babylon to Lily Flanagan's. So I, at this point, it was about 12 hours of drinking at this point. I'm blasted. But in Lily Flanagan's in Babylon, and like everyone's, it's like, it's kind of clubby vibes, and everyone's dancing, and I'm just there like bobbing along in like my Nick Leddy jersey and Islanders hat. Like that's just like so, I feel like so random. Like everyone just has like, you know, a collared shirt on, and like they're trying to be all dressed up tonight. I'm like covered in sweat from just like being out all day and just sweating so much vodka out of my body.
Basically Russian.
More or less, yes.
Mine was camping. So okay. We all know that I have this Islanders onesie, right? I got it when I went to the JT game. It's an Islanders like pajama fleece onesie. And when I go camping, or anyone goes camping, you sit by the fire until the late hours of the night. Well, it gets cold at night. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to put on a damn onesie. I'm not going to put like a big sweater or a big coat and pants and what? The onesie. And then I'm done. Because that thing is toasty warm.
Yeah,
it is surprisingly toasty. And it was great. It's like, what is it, September maybe? This is like, I think last year. You're September and no one's thinking hockey just yet. No one's thinking that specifically in Ottawa. And no one's thinking that Islanders either. It was such a weird setting to be walking around with my Islanders onesie. And it's bright blue, right? Like blue and orange. It's very loud. So it's just the weirdest setting to be having the most Islanders thing possible. It was great.
Love that. Last one from me is just, it's not from one account specific, but just I want to talk about all the rumors with the return to play. So it looks like January 13th, 56 game season. Divisions realigned. Islanders division looks tough, but the last 2 days, Mitch, I have been so happy. I don't know about you, but just getting all this figured out, and it seems like we are inches away from an NHL season, has me overjoyed.
Oh, absolutely. Like we spent, what is it, 9 months of offseason, and now we're like, let's go give me some damn hockey. And here we go. We're getting some damn hockey. It's great. I can't wait for it to start. You're right. The division looks tough. Boston, it's what we thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
Boston, Buffalo, and then the rest of the division stays. The only change is, again, they come in and then Carolina, Columbus goes out. But like, it's going to be tough. And on a 56-game schedule, I just want to see how it works, where they're going to play, how frequently, and so on and so forth. That's that. When I see the schedule, that's when it's going to be real.
Yes, no, absolutely. I can't wait. I already started my player expectations, wrote about Anders Lee today, and we'll probably do another one tomorrow and just keep pounding these out until we get to opening night. Can't wait.
Let's go. Let's go. My last one here is from at V Pericone 92. So it's Vincent Pericone. I hope I pronounced that right. I'm sorry. And it's he's replying to Frankie Borelli. I think everyone knows who he is. And because Frankie tweeted out, there's that screen grabs of all the retro reverse jerseys in NHL 21.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the picture of Matthew Barzal is it looks like Matthew Barzal in 20 years from now.
Okay.
He just looks very aged. Anyways, Vincent replies to that with this gif of Kevin Spacey. So I guess it's a Kevin Spacey night somewhere. So he's got the Kevin Spacey mask, right? Like, and then he turns it away and it's Kevin Spacey. And as Vincent says, the Isles showing up in their retro reverse jerseys. And then that gif.
And that makes
hilarious.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Perfect. That's literally the perfect meme for it. That and the people who had the office one where it's like corporate wants you to find the difference between these two pictures. It's those could not be any more perfect. I love it. That's amazing.
Well, it's a darker blue. We get it. It's a darker blue, and they flipped the two colors. It. We get it.
They flipped it, Mitch. That it's completely different. It looks nothing like the jerseys they wore in the late 90s and early 2000s either. So I don't know where you got that idea from either. But yeah.
I also don't get the people like, I don't understand. These things look fresh. Of course they look fresh because the regular ones look. Oh, God, we're doing the whole thing again.
I know.
But it drives me nuts. Like, what do you mean you don't like them? It's not that I don't like them. It's that it's not creative and it's not fun. And this whole thing was supposed to be creative and fun.
Exactly. You could not have explained it any better. Yes, it looks nice. It can also be very boring at the same time, and you could want more, which I think we fall in that exact same boat.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my last one. I thought that was funny, and it didn't get a lot of likes, so I'm going to hit up with a like because it deserves more attention. So thank you, everyone, for that.
Absolutely. So before we go, just a couple of plugs. Wherever you are listening to this, please make sure to subscribe. Give a rating and review. That could really help us out. We appreciate all the love and support. You could also follow along with us on social media at Eyes on Isles FS. My Twitter is Matt O'Leary NY. Mitch is over at TLO Mitch. Facebook.com/Eyes on Isles. You can download the Eyes on Isles app, available for iPhone or Android. You could also visit the website eyesonisles.com. And last but not least, check out the Patreon. Patreon.com/Eyes on Isles gets you a bunch of bonus content for $5 a month. You get post-game shows during the season, which will be here before you know it. A mailbag show, which we're going to record after this. A live stream with Mitch. Whole bunch of fun stuff over there. It's an absolute blast, right?
Something going up every day. Now that the season is here, or basically here, we're trying to ramp this up even more because everyone's getting excited. This should be a good time. Hit up the Patreon. It's $5 a month. It's absolutely worth it. You won't regret your $5 being spent there.
Absolutely. But that's going to do it for us on episode 173. Thanks again for tuning in. I'm Matt O'Leary. He's Mitch Anderson. And we'll talk to you next time.